It was March of 2020. Everything from local coffee shops to major sports leagues were shutting down because of the pandemic. Across the country, businesses were at risk of closing down permanently.
People are being sent home. They're being laid off. It's unclear if or when they're going to come back. I mean, it was this unprecedented economic catastrophe. And so the government realized we need to do something about this, or we could end up with bread lines during a pandemic.
And the something they did was to hand out government loans to all kinds of people.
Tom Brady got it. Kanye West got it.
Sorry, wait, what?
Yes.
Tom Brady and Kanye West got these government loans.
This is Up First Sunday. I'm Rachel Martin. Today, NPR investigations correspondent Sasha Pfeiffer tells us what went wrong when the government tried to help businesses stay afloat during the pandemic.
They created this thing called the Paycheck Protection Program.
And this, Sasha, was for all those businesses who were panicked about their future, right?
Exactly. It was for businesses with no more than 500 employees. It was supposed to help small businesses, and they could apply for up to $10 million in loans that would be potentially forgivable.
Wow. So in the end, how much money was spent on PPP?
Almost $800 billion went out to small businesses around the country.
All right, so that's a backdrop. It's 2022. You got interested in what happened to all those loans.
I did, because when the paycheck protection money started going out, suddenly we heard that private jet companies and country clubs were getting it.
Lots of celebrities.
Big firms, large chains, a number of well-connected people here in Washington, lobbying firms.
Billionaires, family offices, and even Kanye West all receiving millions under that PPP program.
Tom Brady has a company called TB12. It's a sports nutrition company. It got almost $1 million. It got about $960,000. Did not seem like the type of people and businesses this money was intended for.
Right. Yeah. So I will say it's easy for me to say, oh, these rich people, Tom Brady, you know, Kanye don't deserve these loans because they have so much money.
I mean, really, their deserving was not part of the factor.
Okay, so what were the criteria? I mean, what was the application process like? What did they have to prove?
You only had to promise the government that you needed the money. That was it. It was basically, it was called self-certifying. And the government assumed, it trusted people to self-certify correctly that they needed the money. And if you said you needed it, you got the money.
Did you have to provide evidence to back up that claim?
You did not.
That is amazing.
Yeah. There were a number of House oversight pandemic hearings, and in one, we hear Steve Mnuchin, the former Treasury Secretary.
When we put in that certification, we thought that people would self-select appropriately. And unfortunately, there were a number of companies that were high profile that took the loans, and I publicly came out against that.
I just can't believe that the Secretary of Treasury was in charge of this whole program, trusting all these different businesses to just do the right thing. I mean, I would like to think that that's how human nature and businesses work, but it seems like an awful lot of money to have risked to people just being honest on these things.
I agree. And, you know, Steve Mnuchin was at Goldman Sachs. It seems like a somewhat naive view that companies would be that honest. I mean, the LA Lakers took money. They ended up being sort of criticized and giving it back.
We did get about $12 billion returned, I think, to a large extent. It was from large public companies and some large sporting teams that I'm a big fan of.
But there was a large amount of trust at the beginning that turns out to not have been well-deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And there was public outrage. Rachel, as part of my reporting, I talked to a lot of small business owners about the Paycheck Protection Program. One of them was a man who owns an art gallery on Cape Cod.
Hello.
His name is Roy Thurston, and here's what he said.
What bothers me is the people that took money that should have known better than to take money.
So you wish people who took the money had been more... What word do I want to use?
Worthy.
Worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it should have been for people who really needed it.
But the money went out extremely quickly, so quickly that even basic fraud safeguards were removed. You know, Rachel, when you and I deposit a check, there's usually a 24-hour delay before it shows up on our account, right?
Right.
They eliminated even that 24-hour delay when they were giving out loans. They gave money to people on the U.S. Treasury's Do Not Pay list. That's the equivalent of the TSA's Do Not Fly list. Mm. I also talked with a bunch of academics who've studied PPP, and one of them is this very smart, very funny MIT economist named David Autor, and he described the way the money went out like this.
It's as if
you know, you came home from work one day and you walked into your kitchen and you notice, oh my God, there's a small fire by the stove. I need to put this out, but you don't have a fire extinguisher. So you go outside, you connect a huge hose to a fire hydrant and you come in and you douse your entire house with water. Well, that would certainly put out the fire, but it would be a very costly thing to do.
That's what they did with the money. They gushed it out into the economy.
Okay, remember, these were considered loans. So after the break, how many people had to pay that money back?
This message comes from NPR sponsor Smartwool. How important is it to you that companies are putting the planet first? Smartwool is committed to sustainability, using natural, responsibly sourced merino wool in their gear and recycled materials in their packaging. Every single item Smartwool makes is backed by their Go Far, Feel Good guarantee, ensuring you're 100% satisfied with every Smartwool purchase. Enjoy 15% off your first order of base layers, socks, and accessories at smartwool.com.
I'm Rachel Martin, and we're back with Up First Sunday and my conversation with NPR Investigations correspondent Sasha Pfeiffer on the government's Paycheck Protection Program. All right, so just so I understand this, Sasha, all you had to do was say that you were hurt by the pandemic, and you as a business owner could be granted these potentially forgivable loans. But that's the second step in all this, right? I mean, getting those loans actually forgiven?
Exactly. And that's what I was interested in trying to find out, because I had never heard a full accounting of, well, these were potentially forgivable. How many got forgiven? Because you would think Tom Brady's shouldn't get forgiven, right? So we got a bunch of data from the Small Business Administration, and I worked with this excellent data analyst on my team named Austin Fast. Austin crunched all the data, and he found that most of these loans have been forgiven, about 91%. But if you look at just the year 2020, 97% of the 2020 loans have been forgiven, despite everything we knew about the wrong type of people who seem to be getting the money.
So how did that happen? I mean, did the government just drop the ball? These weren't all supposed to be basically gifts to people, were they?
Well, what's interesting is the government claims that they always intended the majority to be forgiven. I understand that the government prioritized speed over accuracy at the beginning because they thought the world was ending. But my question to the government was, but you knew that it went to companies that didn't need it. Some of them even thrived in the pandemic, many contractors, teleworking companies, and there was a huge amount lost to fraud because the government made this money so easy to get that a lot of people just made up companies and got checks. Why not at the end, was there not more strictness when it came to forgiveness?
So what did you find out on this?
Well, a few things. One main thing is that Congress never indicated they wanted strictness. In fact, even after they saw all this fraud and all these undeserving companies get the money, they made it easier to get forgiven. And partly this was because businesses lobbied for that. They said, we don't want to be on the hook for these loans. Please assure us we're not going to have to pay them back. And Congress allowed that. And think of how strong business lobbies are.
Right.
Let me give you an example of that. After all these allegations of fraud and undeserving recipients came out, Steve Mnuchin, his office tried to create this more detailed questionnaire that said, okay, before we forgive the money, you're going to have to show us how you actually suffered financially during the pandemic.
Okay.
But they got sued by some business groups for that. And the business group said, you said at the beginning, we just had to say we needed the money. You can't make us later prove that we needed the money. Huh. And that case settled in favor of the businesses and the questionnaire was eliminated.
Wow.
There was a House Oversight pandemic hearing where we hear Congress people talking about the pressure they're hearing from businesses to get forgiveness. There's one from John Kennedy of Louisiana, and he talks about the concern he's hearing from his constituents that they're going to have to pay the money back. And you'll hear him assured by Mnuchin that his constituents probably don't have anything to worry about.
And the small business women and small business men think that the federal government is going to double cross on the forgiveness of these loans. You need to be mindful of that.
In the recent bill, there was an extension from 2 years to 5 to 10 years, but I don't expect businesses are going to need to use that because I think the majority of this money is going to be forgiven in the next few months, and that's our intent. You know, I'd like to make this as easy as possible. I want to assure people that if
okay, so
this, money,
this is clearly the way the program was designed. They got the money in the hands of the people who said they were in need, but there was a lot of waste. Whose fault was that? And this is a key question. And what was frustrating about this project is it's hard to assign fault. And partly it's because this overlapped two administrations, Trump and Biden. Also, as the government said to me, Congress never said they wanted strict loan application scrutiny or strict loan forgiveness application scrutiny. Mm-hmm. You know, they clearly did not like these questions I was asking them mm-hmm. because they feel like they accomplished something enormous and that, of course, there was going to be a little bit of fraud. But in the end, they feel like more good was done. I called a Biden official who's now at the Small Business Administration. His name is Patrick Kelly. And he feels that this incredible thing was accomplished.
It's an easy sentiment, in my opinion, to say, well, there goes the government again. Why didn't they do it right? But it, to me, it ignores the awesomeness of what did get done right. And so I, too, have met people who make comments that you are describing, but I've met many more people who are thankful for the relief that we chose to do as a society together.
When I pressed Kelly, however, on why wasn't there more accuracy at the beginning, he said to me, call Steve Mnuchin.
You did, because you're you. How did that go?
I called his office. I did not hear back from Mnuchin. I did hear back from Michael Faulkender, who was a Treasury official under Mnuchin. He's also a finance professor at the University of Maryland. He, like Patrick Kelly, clearly did not like my questions and did not like that what the government accomplished was being criticized and questioned. Uh-huh. He feels like they had this enormous crisis and they had to act decisively. This is part of what Faulkender said.
Because PPP got up and running, because all of those small businesses were able to maintain people on payroll, we did not realize the catastrophe that could have taken place had we failed. What would breadlines during a pandemic have looked like? Do we want to know? I didn't. And so we were going to get that program up and running.
But I pressed him on why at the back end was there not stricter vetting for forgiveness?
Should have tightened over time rather than become more lenient given the way it played out.
He took a long pause to answer that.
Congress, through its deliberative process, decided to make those changes, and it was our responsibility to implement them. As a former senior Treasury official, that's how I look at it.
He said he's very proud that the Paycheck Protection Program rescued many people from unemployment. But he also told me he has two different views.
My personal opinion as an academic economist who evaluates the program, that's a totally different interview.
And can you share what your opinion as an academic is?
It does appear over time that Congress' intention changed.
Faulkender said Congress gradually changed the program in a way that strayed from its original goal. He said it was designed to save jobs, but it switched basically to making small business grants. And he described that switch as questionable. That's the word he used.
Again, speaking in my personal capacity, I can see why people would be concerned about having morphed what I think was an exceptionally successful program into doing something different.
And Rachel, that's a concession there. You know, both the Trump and Biden administration officials I talked to said that the program got easier over time in terms of forgiving the money and how to use the money. I mean, originally it was mostly meant to keep workers on the payroll. In the end, you could use it for other things, like if there was looting and vandalism of a building, you could use some of the money for that. And you didn't have to keep all your employees on the payroll. You could have just offered them a job. And if they didn't come back, that counts as having kept your employee on the payroll. So the standards kept getting weaker and weaker.
Right. Well, and did they just decide that it was worth a few, you know, billionaires getting these loans forgiven if it also meant that, you know, all these small business owners could have the loans forgiven and they didn't have to spend the money or investigative time to differentiate between the two?
That's basically the government's argument. You know, they basically say, yes, there was fraud, but we consider it relatively small, maybe only 1%. But there is a group of researchers at the University of Texas. They did a study. They think it's more like 12%, and that's $64 billion. It's a lot of money.
So that clearly that was a cost that the administration was willing to bear.
It seems that way, although the Justice Department is trying to chase down fraudsters now.
There's also the problem of people who didn't seem to deserve the money. That is obviously very aggravating to people who really needed the money and feel like they saw people who didn't need it. I'll give you an example. We interviewed a woman in Alabama. Her name is Beba Talupas, mm-hmm. who has a restaurant that was shut down during COVID, like so many mm-hmm. restaurants. It could only do takeout orders. She had a customer come in one day, and she said he had an electrical business, and he told her that he took PPP money but held it aside and didn't spend it until he learned that it could be forgiven, and she was just so disgusted.
He had the nerve to tell me that he got money, and he didn't need it, got money, didn't need it, and that was like three times the amount of money I got, maybe four. And I looked at him and thought, I don't ever want to see you in my restaurant again. No. Mm-mm. But they have smart accountants, they have lawyers, and they can get away with that. While I'm here trying to keep these doors open and keep my employees working, no.
I did talk with a commercial loan officer who said that is what he advised people to do. His name is Eric Lachotten, and he works at Centerville Bank in Rhode Island.
Take advantage of the program because you don't know how long the funds are going to be available for. And basically take the money and put it aside in a separate account. So don't tap into it right away until the rules become a little bit more clear, but you do have it as a safety net available to you in case your business does take a massive hit and you do need it.
People who took the money but ended up not needing it did nothing illegal. It was totally fine by the rules.
As in, they followed the law. These are the rules the government set out for this loan program, and I followed them.
Absolutely. And if you can get it forgiven, great. If not, or if there are problems, give it back. This is where we get into this basically morality debate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fascinating part of this conversation.
But even so, there are still people out there, small business owners who played by the rules, got these loans, and then their loans weren't forgiven, right?
Right.
How many people were in that situation?
Right. There's this tiny percentage of people that sort of, you know, somewhere between 3 and 9% who haven't been forgiven yet. And we wanted to figure out, who are they? Mm-hmm. The answer really surprised us. Many of these unforgiven businesses are the tiniest of businesses. You know, sole proprietors, meaning one-person businesses, barbers, janitors, hairdressers, Uber drivers. Mm-hmm. And also surprising was why they're not forgiven in some cases. Some just haven't done it yet. I think part is procrastination. Part also is if you're a one-person business, you don't have accountants and a business office to have it done for you. It's overwhelming. It ends up on the bottom of your to-do list.
But wait, you're telling me they didn't get their loans forgiven because they're just too busy and they haven't gotten around to it? Like, I don't.
Yeah, no, I had a similar reaction. We were calling these people and would hear that they hadn't done it. Actually, this is part of the story, which is that so many of these people they just weren't sure how to navigate government bureaucracy. They're busy. Mm. But the reality is that there are many people who they don't have a business office that can do this for them.
Sunglasses, jewelry.
There's another business on Cape Cod that's basically in this situation. It's a clothing and gift shop called Artichoke.
I'd rather be downstairs silk screening right now. Like, I don't know what to do.
It tried to get its loan forgiven, but long story short, it ran into complications and it's had trouble getting answers from anyone. This is part of what one of the store's co-owners, Katie Escher, told me.
I can't get a hold of the SBA. And then when I talk to a human being on Square, they tell us to contact the SBA. Please reach out to the Small Business Administration for further details. So we're just in teeter-totter land here.
Rachel, she mentioned Square. Do you ever pay for something online and get a receipt from a company called Square?
Sure do.
All right. This is called a fintech company, a financial technology company. They have names like Lendestry and Womply and Cabbage. They're businesses that use newer technology to offer financial services, like higher tech banks. And they were allowed to give PPP loans. And if you got your loan from a fintech, there seems to be a greater chance that you will not have been forgiven. Hmm. We think many of these fintechs were tiny and got overwhelmed, and they've already been paid their processing fee for making a loan, so there's less incentive at the back end for them to forgive a loan. Now, the government says they believe that eventually most of these remaining loans will be forgiven, that either the borrowers or their lenders just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Huh. So amidst all the urgency and the chaos of the early days of the pandemic, there was a lot of incentive for business owners to apply for these loans, and they figured out the technology to do it. Same thing for the companies that were distributing the loans.
Yes, and applying for and getting a loan was pretty easy. In fact, one of these financial technology companies we reported on called Cabbage brags on its website that it took basically an average of 4 hours to approve a loan, very fast. So they got them quickly, and I think this is the reality of complicated, messy human lives. You got the money, it helped you, and now you have this complicated thing to do at the back end, and they're getting a total runaround. Can't get anybody on the phone. Or they do, and it's clearly an overseas call center where the person is reading from a script and seems designed to stonewall them.
The amount of stress and business interruption caused by dealing with Cabbage, that almost was like a second catastrophic event. Because we had to stop everything, and I was on the phone like every single day.
This is a woman named Nancy Kelly. She has an accounting firm, a small accounting firm, with offices in Boston and New York.
And then I called the SBA, but they pretty much told me to pound sand. They did not provide any assistance. And I got to tell you, if I had known the difficulty, I would have just lived without the loan.
By the way, Cabbage, spelled with a K, is actually the subject of a class action lawsuit from people who say that company approved loans lightning quick, and now they've dropped the ball when it comes time to forgive the loans.
Wow. So this is sort of a mess, up and down.
It's a total mess. And this gets at another underlying problem. It's kind of a structural problem with our government. This MIT economist I interviewed, David Autor, he makes the point that, yes, the Paycheck Protection Program did not go well, a lot of waste. But he says our government technological systems are so antiquated and outdated, literally decades old, that our systems can't talk to each other. And that even if we wanted to do this program faster and more accurately, it couldn't have been done.
This is a real problem for the United States. The real indictment, in some sense, is how do we get to a state where we're so administratively incompetent? We're a big country, we're wealthy. How is it that our administrative systems are, 50 years out of date?
So he thinks that we have not invested in government technology, and therefore we are paying for that now in a bad way.
Mm-hmm. And from what you've been telling me, though, it's not like you can point a finger at someone and hold them accountable for what's happened and then make fixes so it doesn't happen again.
Yes, and I found that aspect of this very unsatisfying and frustrating. Because I said to David Autor, is there anyone really to hold accountable here? And he said, basically, we, the people, in a way, should be held accountable because we have been conditioned to believe that government is wasteful and inefficient, and therefore we have let its technology systems get really outdated. We don't invest in government. Mm. And as a result, we couldn't roll out money quickly but accurately.
It became a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It did, like a self-fulfilling prophecy of incompetence.
Yeah.
Because our computer systems, government computer systems, are often ancient. They don't talk to each other. We had no way to know exactly which companies laid off workers, so we just blasted money out there. And he thinks that our failure to invest in government technology was a huge factor here.
People spend all this time worrying about the deep state and so on. I worry greatly about the shallow state, the superficial and archaic state of a national governance in the United States that doesn't allow us to act nimbly based on information.
Oh, but I can already hear the pushback to that. After this disaster of the PPP program, you're telling us we want to give the federal bureaucracy more money?
Yeah, and I asked him that too. Do you really think in this climate we can get people to invest more in government? And he basically says, if you invest more in government, it will become more efficient, and it's relatively small money. He said, think how much we spend on the Defense Department. We could probably upgrade the IRS and Small Business Administration and unemployment systems, software systems, for pretty small money. They would work so much better, and we would save money in the long run. I'm not sure if the public can be convinced of that, but that's his view.
So what's the legacy of all this? I mean, it's easy to point to the people who were directly affected and understand what it meant to them. But when we look back at this program now and all the holes that were in it, what does it mean for us moving forward?
And, Rachel, I think that is the key gigantic question. And I asked David Autor that, and he said, it's a debt for future generations. The federal debt is something like $31 trillion. Who can even understand?
Yeah, you can't wrap your head around
it. It's unimaginable.
What yeah.
But what does that mean exactly? Because it's hard to wrap your brain around that number. And he said that our children and our children's children will potentially be paying for all this spending, and that will come in the form of higher taxes for them, maybe fewer government services, fewer services for the elderly. It's less money for future important things. And so the number is unimaginable and hard to comprehend, but actually has tangible consequences in the future.
Sasha, this was so interesting. Thank you so much for your reporting on this.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
This week's episode of Up First Sunday was produced by Justine Yan and edited by Barry Hardiman, with help from Jenny Schmidt. Joby Tanseko is our engineer. I'm Rachel Martin. We will be back tomorrow with all the news you need to start your week. Until then, have a great rest of your weekend.